You're listening to HuntertonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located in the CenturyLink building at 14 Mine Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programming.
Prescribed medication helped him understand that she got to die within her own terms. Brittany suffered from a malignant brain tumor and was just 29 years old at the time of her legal suicide. Brittany's husband, Dan Diaz, says they didn't even know if Governor Brown would sign the bill.
It just shows that he did think through this.
I'm Ron Taylor, and you're listening to USA Headline News.
What can you do as a member of Rotary? You can eradicate polio. You can promote peace. You can feed the hungry. You can help children do better in school. Because Rotary believes that by working together, you can do anything. This is District Governor Megan Jones Holt. Learn more about Rotary and join me every Monday at 11 a.m. on the Rotary Hour, the show that is dedicated to answering the ultimate question of what Rotary is. Find us on the web at rotarynj.org. Rotary, humanity in motion.
Welcome to Tech Today on HuntonChamberRadio.com. I'm your host, Chris Bianco, and I'm the principal of Blue Panther Business Partners. Blue Panther Business Partners offers practical advice, hands-on assistance to the business owner who never has time to improve his or her business. We do that by accomplishing your wish list. The mission of Tech Today is to demystify technology so that consumers seeking solutions for personal or business use can be better informed when making purchasing decisions or hiring individuals to carry out those technological decisions. Each week, I will focus on topics about technology. Segments will include technology news, the latest apps, buying advice for hardware and software, and answering your questions. To contact me during the show, go to Tech Today on Facebook. You can message me there. Email me at goodmorning@huntonchamber.com. My phone number here in the studio, 908-237-0410. And to contact me outside the show, visit bluepantherbiz.com. Well, my apologies for last week. I don't think everything went according to plan. But we are back here. It's October. And looking forward to giving you more information about technology. And boy, there's some news articles out here to get you up and in the know about technology that I think you really need to learn about. We'll start off right off with a yet another place, another website business has been a victim of hacks. And this one's a little near and dear to me because I use it. It's Scottrade. We have financial brokerages all over the place, and Scottrade now says it's a victim of hackers who targeted financial firms. Reuters reported this on October 2nd, and it says discount broker Scottrade said on Friday that it was the victim of cyber attack from late 2013 to early 2014 that compromised client names and addresses in database with information on some 4.6 million customers. The firm said it learned about the attack from federal law enforcement officials who were investigating the theft of data from Scottrade and other financial services firms. The company did not identify other potential victims. FBI officials could not be reached for comment. News of the attack comes a day after Experian PLC disclosed a breach that compromised sensitive data of some 15 million people who sought to open accounts with T-Mobile U.S. The two incidents announced on the first 2 days of the U.S. government's Cybersecurity Awareness Month are a stark reminder of the challenges businesses face in getting ahead of hackers following a string of massive breaches in the recent years. Scottrade said on its website that its trading platforms and client funds had not been compromised. Although social security numbers, email addresses, and other sensitive data were contained in the system accessed, it appears that contact information was the focus of the incident, the company said. Scottrade said it planned to offer customers identity theft protection services, had hired a computer forensics firm to investigate the attack, secured the intrusion point, and beefed up network defenses. Scottrade spokeswoman Shia Liardino declined to say if investigators had identified who was behind the attacks. And so there you have it. Yet another firm, another place. Now, a couple months ago, I talked about how there are plenty of smart people who are trying to come up with a new way to handle intrusion. And so we're hoping that this is temporary, that we're going through this phase where the bad guys are ahead of the good guys, but we're going to have to keep doing it. And so therefore, you have to be pretty smart about what you're doing, be pretty vigilant about where you're going. And when a company offers you identity theft for free, I suggest you take it. But I also have suggested in the past that identity theft for free is good. Identity theft after that is not a value, because you could pretty much do what they're doing for free. So please understand that. It's a little bit of a mea culpa by the company that was affected. It's a marketing item for the security firm itself. And so at some point, it doesn't make sense. It's not cost benefit to you to continue, but it is a good idea if you're offered it for free. So that's the first thing that's there. The other one that is really concerning is this app that's come out called People. And so not only is this app People, it's spelled P-E-E-P-L-E, an issue, but it also is affecting somebody else, another business, who had no business getting involved in it. And you'll learn about that in just a moment. So here we go. The Coming People app, spelled P-E-P-L-E. This is from the USA Today. Elizabeth Weiss published this on October 2nd. The Coming People app is like Yelp for humans. But there's a real dark side to this that I think you need to realize. And it's a bit scary. So it's October, so we definitely get scary here. It's like a bad nightmare from middle school, an app that lets people rate anyone they know on a scale of 1 to 5 for all the world to see, and it's scheduled to launch in November. The app is called People, as imagined by creators Julia Cordy-Dre and Nicole McCullough. There's no way to opt out. Did you hear that? There is no way to opt out. The app's tagline is Character is Destiny. The creators see it as a way for people to learn what the world thinks about them and showcase the content of their character. The idea is that if you know someone's cell phone number, you can create a listing for them. You then rate them with between 1 and 5 stars, saying whether you know them personally, professionally, or romantically. If someone creates a listing for you, you'll get a text telling you they've done so. As of now, there's no way to say you'd rather not participate, and no way to keep someone from creating a profile on you. Now, I have talked numerous times on this show about the anonymous websites that are bullying places. We've also talked about Yelp and how Yelp has the ability to rate a business, and for those of you who are business owners, you have come into contact with somebody who, right or wrong, has made a very nasty, negative review of your business. Some of it might be completely irrelevant. Some of it might be absolutely spot on. It's hard to tell, but it's really hard to shake something like that until you drown it out with positive reviews. Same problem here. We got some people who could get into a fight with somebody, have a bad breakup in a relationship, and all of a sudden you've got a character flaw out there in the world. And I don't know, we just don't know how the world is going to react to this, whether they're going to completely ignore it or actually trust what's being said there. So the article continues. It says that could change. In a posting to the app's Facebook page Thursday, CEO Cordry wrote, "We hear you loud and clear. One, you want the option to opt in or opt out. Two, you don't want the ability for users to start your profiles." The app's creators didn't respond immediately to emails Thursday, but on their Facebook page, they said to create profiles on the site, you must be 21 and have an established Facebook account, and all reviews must be made under the real name. How are you going to enforce that? There are kids that were getting into Facebook who shouldn't be on it already. How are you going to enforce that? It continues. Positive ratings post automatically. Any rating with two stars or less goes to the inbox of the person being reviewed. According to a post on its Facebook page, negative reviews do not go live on the app for 48 hours. Assuming you can't turn a negative into a positive, the comment goes live and the person can now publicly defend themselves, the creator said. Only positive reviews show up in the profiles of people who haven't signed up. A little confused by that. That creates what appears to be something of a catch-22. To see what people have said about you, you would have to sign up for the service. But in doing so, you would automatically allow negative reviews about you to go up, reviews that wouldn't be posted if you hadn't gone on the site. The creators say the app will ban profanity, sexism, discussion of private health conditions. Wall Street seems to like this idea. According to a video blog, Cordry and McCullough posted, they raised $250,000 in seed capital funding in 2 weeks this summer. According to a story in the Washington Post on Wednesday, the company's shares are now worth $7.6 million. The public was not quite as thrilled. By Thursday mid-afternoon, hundreds of comments, many negative, had flooded the Facebook page. Tweets and news articles added to that frenzy. It continues with Facebook comments included, "Your profile will say you are clueless to the harm will cause to others, and you people disgust me in a way that I thought it was impossible for human beings to do anymore. If this is not an elaborate hoax, you are creating the most vile, repulsive service in human history." The app site, known as www.forthepeople.com, was not responding Thursday afternoon, whether that was because it hadn't gone live or it was simply crashing under the weight of so many attempted searches was unclear. The article continues yet again. It says, a series of videos that creators had posted on YouTube about the creation of their company and app had been removed on Thursday morning. The app's Facebook page says it's being built by two best friends in Canada, one in the U.S. The headquarters are listed as Calgary, Alberta. However, in her video, Cordry said she had moved to San Francisco to launch this app. And People is scheduled to appear first as an Apple app, but an Android app is also in the works, the creator said on Facebook. So what do you think? This sounds pretty crazy, and it sounds like it's evolving by the minute as they continue to get more information. But it's a bit scary to learn that somebody has the ability to comment on you in the Ethernet, in the Internet, and you have no way of really stopping it, or it's like it said, it's a catch-22. Very interesting, and could be quite dangerous, I would imagine. I mean, people have a very sad perspective of reviewing anonymously. And this might not be anonymously, but man, I don't know how they're going to protect it from not being anonymous or fake. That's the key, fake. How do you keep it from being fake? So then there's this other issue that comes out of this. Wait till you hear this problem. So on Wired.com, it continues with this information about people. And the article's title is People is a Yelp for People, P-E-O-P-L-E, and the other people isn't happy. So what you'll learn is that there's another business who was minding its own business and then got caught in this tsunami of negative. So Chris Shooter is very proud. His company just won a huge competition in the UK and $150,000 for its invention. The product is a smart internet-enabled peephole that lets you peer at your phone to see who's at your door. It's like a virtual caller ID for your home, he says, happily grabbing a miniature door frame, my door frame for ants, and dragging it into a view of video chat. A bright orange circular gadget on the door shows you who's on the other side, even when you aren't home. Beyond the recent accolades, the company took second place at TechCrunch Disrupt in January. But Shooters had but a moment to enjoy it all because his product is called People, P-E-E-P-L-E, and its brand is being hijacked quickly by the press of this other people. So the name may sound familiar because that app, People. We don't need to go through that. So it keeps going with, you can understand why the last 24 hours have been difficult for Shooter and his team in Austin, Texas. We want to be something that people wanted, not something people hated. He walks across the room and grabs his phone to show me how completely out of control his notifications are. There are thousands upon thousands of emails sitting waiting to read. The emails are pretty nice at this point, he explains. Some are coming from people trying to understand the difference between people the thing and people the app. The same cannot be said for his Twitter notifications. He says, you know how Twitter is, he says. Even Chrissy Teigen, unofficial dictator of viral Twitter, unknowingly lambasted the company. So here this poor guy is trying to build a business, and he's getting whacked by the negativism of this other thing. It says, this was supposed to be our moment in the sun, says Shooter. We just won a major competition, then this happened yesterday and completely swallowed up our press. Our branding is in tatters. Well, changing the course of public misconception is an exceedingly difficult battle to wage. People, the thing, does have recourse to challenge People, the app. After discussing it with his lawyer, Shooter described the situation. Smart Home People has a registered trademark in the U.S. with intent to use, and you can see it, you can find it. People, the app, registered at around the same time last year, but its trademark registration is in Canada, where one of its founders is from, and is currently in a suspended status, which could mean someone in Canada is challenging their trademark. Which makes sense, of course, since the app hasn't even been launched. All it has to show at the moment was screenshots. I'll note here that I tried without success to reach the folks at People, the app, by phone and through Facebook, and their site's been down all day. That's the author, by the way. To be clear, it's perfectly legal for two companies to have the same name if the two companies are registered in different countries. It's also important to note that suspended trademark registration doesn't mean the registration had been canceled. Usually it means we're not using it right away this second, but we got something coming, says Mackenzie Hanks, a lawyer who wants interred at the USPTO. Suspension can lead to cancellation. For instance, a U.S. company could challenge them and say, hey, you're not using this, we are, and then Canada would decide what to do about it. But People the Thing can't go to the U.S. courts to get People the App to stop using the name based purely on that. The company would have to prove the app is damaging its brand. Oh, my God. They'd have to say, this is going to make us look bad, and we have a trademark, and therefore they can't use that here. Should the app try to make a U.S. launch, Hanks explains, and given its preemptively negative feelings, People again sigh the app was wrought. It at least seems like People the Thing, you see why this is a problem, right, should have an argument. Obviously, we'd like not to be called what they're called, Shooter says as diplomatically as possible. I know we're not as sexy as the other thing, but you know, I like to think that we have a legitimate purpose. The team has been working on people for years now, and as fate would have it, it originally named the product Peep, but a trademark database search scorched that. We saw Peep was taken, so we went with People, Shooter said with a laugh, clearly employing the irony. These women are funded, I think, he says, referring to People, the app. They should be able to search trademarks and figure that out. That doesn't mean that Shooter isn't without sympathy for the founders of the app, Julia Cordry and Nicole McCullough, in part because he's getting a lot of irate tweets meant for them. I feel bad for them. I can't imagine what this is like. I'm only seeing a percentage of it. It's been an interesting glimpse. The LGBT and the trans communities are going nuts against these people, he says, which it makes sense. A lot of people who are already experiencing oppression and bullying don't want an app like this. It's possible that People, the app, will back away from its nefarious-sounding purpose. Other similar conceits have done so before. When Lulu launched, it was pitched as a gay rating app for women, and men had no idea their profiles were included within the network. After backlash, though, Lulu included ways to pull your profile. If you don't want to be on Lulu, you don't have to be, says co-founder Allison Schwartz. There were a lot of misconceptions about it, and we had to spend time educating users and the press. In addition to rewriting Lulu's early story, the app has added automatic removal. Originally, it was a manual process only. Now, our community management program is expanded, so there's self-removal and the community removal program. While People could pivot and attempt another stab at user approval, there's that whole matter of its trademark, which People the Thing has and People the App doesn't. As a company, we have the registered U.S. trademark and intent to use, says Shooter, and just it's clear we are not changing our name and we're not going anywhere. Well, I appreciate you sticking to your guns, sir, but you might really want to think about it. I don't know how long this is going to last, but you might want to at least start the process of coming up with a rename. Because if this continues, it's going to be very confusing. So there you have it. A lot of discourse and crazy stuff going on just because of apps and people coming up with ideas, but they get pretty dangerous. All right, we've gone long overdue for our message break. I need to take a break, and we will be back with more of Tech Today in just a moment.
Let Stowaway Self-Storage be your local moving and storage solution. With three great locations in Hunterdon County, Stowaway is conveniently located in Flemington, White House, and Lebanon. Stowaway Self-Storage offers sizes from 5x5 to 50x50, discounted packing supplies, and U-Haul rentals on site. Affordable monthly rentals for your personal and business use, let Stowaway help you park your car in the garage again or store those old records that you need to keep. Visit us at stowawayselfstorage.com and mention this ad to receive 50% off your first month's rent.
Hey, this is Big C of Good Morning Hunterdon on HuntingChamberRadio.com. Like what you hear on Hunterdon Chamber Radio? Now you can take it with you. Download our Hunterdon Chamber Radio app from iTunes and Google Play Store now. Get schedules, station information, listen live, or to the latest podcasts. Everything in the palm of your hand, or in your car during your commute. Get the HuntingChamberRadio.com app today.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm a CPA with the accounting firm of Bedard Corking Company, and I joined the Chamber to interact with new Chamber members and expand our mutual needs for business networking and giving back to the Hunterdon business community.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Alright, welcome back to Tech Today on HuntingChamberRadio.com. Apple seems to be having some difficulties. It's what used to be a norm of them being high quality software producers is starting to change, and I don't know if they're feeling pressure or there's been a change in philosophy, but or there's been articles that have claimed that they've been opening up more development opportunities for external people and therefore opening up a lot of closed doors to their software so that the software could interact. One of the big complaints about the iOS and the OS X of Apple is that it's all homegrown, it's all internal, and doesn't get as creative and as innovative as some of the other platforms, Android and Windows. So the cheatsheet.com reports that we got some problems with the iOS 9 that I need to let you know about. And then we have some additional problems with iOS 9.0.2. So let's get that information to you. The cheat sheet reports that iOS 9, just how secure is Apple's new OS? And it says that Apple's new iOS 9 operating system for the iPhone and iPad brings an assortment of new and exciting features. The new software also brings a new small but notable compromise when it comes to operating systems priorities regarding privacy and security. Even as Apple works to overhaul not its approach's privacy, how it keeps users informed on how their data is handled. Russell Brandon reports that on The Verge that when Apple first unveiled iOS 9 this summer, one of the biggest selling points of the new operating system was a smarter Siri. With iOS 9, Siri is more deeply integrated into apps and services, and it pulls more data from a wider variety of sources and offers you recommendations before you even ask for something. But researchers have discovered a drawback to Siri's new intelligence. iOS 9 enables users to access Siri from the lock screen. If you know how to manipulate that screen and that access, you can use it to add contacts or to access the photos that are stored on the device. While the vulnerability is unlikely to be exploited widely, some critics are speculating that police could use it to inspect a suspect's phone even without knowing the passcode that locks it. Fixing the vulnerability is simple. You can disable Siri access for the lock screen in the Touch ID and passcode section of the Settings app. Unfortunately, as Brandon notes, most users won't bother to change this default if they find out about the vulnerability at all. That means that the iPhone's lock screen protection just got a little bit weak. The lock screen vulnerability isn't the only iOS 9 feature that should give security-minded users pause. For instance, the operating system is promiscuous when it comes to desktop tethering. An unlocked iPhone can tether to a computer with a single click. No password is necessary, which enables the computer to copy emails, photos, and texts whenever the phone is connected, even if it's unlocked. Neither the lock screen vulnerability nor the tethering practice is particularly scary on its own. But as Brandon reports, their appearance in iOS 9 reveals an uglier truth about Apple and the priority it supposedly places on users' privacy and security. While the company champions better forms of encryption and responsible handling of user data, and security experts find a lot to like about what Apple's software is all about, Cupertino sometimes opts to trade security for convenience. That's unsettling for users who thought the Apple left such practices behind with CelebGate leaks, which were enabled by an overly cooperative iCloud system. While iOS 9 still offers some features that prioritize convenience over security, Apple is taking important steps to keep users informed about how the software handles their data and how they can make their devices more secure. Matthew Pazzarino reports for TechCrunch that Apple recently updated its privacy site, adding new information about iOS 9, the latest version of OS X, and wide array of services and features offered to users. The section on how to manage your privacy in particular offers clear explanations of what you can do to improve your security. Use a complex passcode, enable a Touch ID, turn on Find My iPhone, and control the data you are sharing with apps and ad exchanges for starters. Panzerino points out that privacy is something that everyone should care about, but studies continue to indicate that people either aren't aware of the compromises they make or unaware of the implications of their choices. By expanding its privacy page and presenting information in clear language and with supporting data, Apple is making it easier for users to understand how the company is protecting their information. Looking through Apple's explanations of how iOS 9 handles users' privacy, it's clear that any information that helps users understand what happens to their data is good information to circulate. But it also is important for users to know that if they choose to use a modern smartphone and all the cloud-dependent software it needs to function, there's likely no such thing as a completely secure device. While it's safer to entrust your data to Apple than to many other companies, a phone that's easy to use will unlikely always make a few security compromises. Users just need to be aware of the compromises that Apple's made and decide which compromises they're willing to make and which they'd rather opt out of by turning off features or changing default settings. Yes, it continues to happen, ladies and gentlemen, that everybody buys into these smartphones and takes them by default the way they use. In fact, many people don't even want to dabble into some of the controls, ideas, and settings for fear they're going to break it. So they leave it by default, and some of those defaults are actually not necessarily what you would perhaps like. And so you need to go through these and understand it. I do commend Apple for making these security choices and settings in their privacy statements more readable, but it's only readable if you actually go to read them, and that's what's troubling. Many people just accept what's going on as the norm or have resigned themselves to that this is just the way it is. There's no use fighting it. If I want to use a smartphone, I'm just going to be at risk for the public and for privacy. And it doesn't need to be. And we've talked many times about how right now the bad guys are winning, but there are some very smart, intelligent people out there who are working on making things much more secure, and we hopefully will get there while we're in this dry spell. Apple, nonetheless, seems to be making some decisions that are a little bit scary, and their data, their software development seems to be suspect. They used to be very quality-minded and tried to avoid any type of unsettling re-releases or bug fixes. But iOS 9 is starting to show some nasty surprises. This is written by Forbes' Gordon Kelly, and it was written on the 3rd. It says, despite delivering a host of great new features, iOS 9 is turning out to be one of the Apple's most troublesome launches. Two dedicated bug fixes have been released in the last week to combat the growing list of user problems, and now the second has come with a somewhat nasty and risky surprise. With iOS 9.02, Apple has stopped signing both iOS 8.4.1, which was the last version of iOS 8, and iOS 9. Signing is what allows a device to go back to the previous iOS version. Apple's servers sign off permission to install each software version and is commonly used when a user experiences trouble with new software versions. Completely with the release of iOS 9.02 has taken away the escape back to iOS 8. It's either iOS 9.01 or 9.02 now or nothing. So this is a problem for a number of reasons. First, iOS 9.02 doesn't fix all the bugs in iOS 9, and now any users who experience problems cannot get back to iOS 8 safely. While Apple continues to beta test its first major iOS 9 update, iOS 9.1, secondly, based on iOS beta history, iOS 9.1 still at least 1 to 2 months away, and Apple releasing a third pure bug fix for iOS 9, which would be 9.03, would start to make people panic. It would also be unprecedented for Apple to put out 4 iOS updates in such a quick succession. 3 in itself is new ground, with Apple last doing 2 only when it had to release iOS 8.02, which covered for pulling the troubled 8.01 from the market. And what about losing the sign-off from iOS 9? That actually matters far less than iOS 9.01. Still being signed in iOS 9.02 are being tweaked improvements of it. Basically, if you are struggling with iOS 9.01 or iOS 9.02, then iOS 9 is not going to help you. Though a trip back to iOS 8.4.1, the final version of 8, would have. What I would like to let people know is that really, and we've talked about this, whenever you go to a major release, that is like 8 to 9, iOS 8 to iOS 9, I really have always recommended that you wait if you can. A 9.0 release or an 8.0 release usually is going to have trouble. And it's best to let people who want to investigate the trouble, want to report on the trouble, or just the people that just want to be on the bleeding edge of trouble, let them get involved. Let the bug fixes get worked out, and then, and only then, do you upgrade after everybody else has kind of worked through some of the problems. For those of you who immediately jump into iOS 9 because you think it's going to be new and fun, it's very frustrating. It's troubling. It's not. It all of a sudden it's affecting your work. It's affecting your communication. A phone is a phone, and it's very important to you. And if you have to deal with all the problems of it, it's not worth it. So decide who you are. Decide what you want to deal with. But for most of us, avoiding the major releases initially and let other people fix them and get bug fixes out there prior to even making that conversion is the prudent choice, because then you will not have to deal with the frustration of what all these others are doing. These other people want to get involved because they want to write about it, they want to fix it, or they enjoy the challenge. For a majority of us, we just want our phone to work. Apple, I don't know, man. It's getting troubling that these releases are getting fast and furious, and they're not as high quality as they used to be. That's unfortunate, but it is happening. So I don't know if there's a change in philosophy, but they certainly need some a change in their quality control. We're going to take another quick break, and we'll be back in just a minute. You're listening to Tech Today on HuntingChamberRadio.com.
The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce is proud to present HuntingChamberRadio.com. All business, all talk, all community. Bringing you local news, information, events, and informative programming. Proudly serving the businesses and residents of Hunterdon County, New Jersey.
Been talking about operating systems and talking about Apple, but we've got another operating system out there. And as I said, what happens is when operating systems get released, there's a group of people that have a desire to learn about it, improve upon it, make some recommendations upon it, tweak it, hack it, whatever they want. But here's an article about Windows 10 from CNET.com. It said, three easy ways to speed up Windows 10. Who wouldn't like a faster computer? These handy tricks will give you faster startup, shutdown, and start menu access. So, written by Rick Broida on October 2nd. He says, are you running Windows 10 on a brand new PC, or did you upgrade one that's 8 years old? Maybe something in between? Whatever your PC's origin story, there are three ways to make it faster, and I don't mean faster at crunching complex spreadsheets or processing mammoth Photoshop edits. I'm talking about speedier startup, shutdown, and start menu access. You know, the things that matter day to day. Give me 5 minutes and I'll save you precious seconds. Wait, that sounds like a bad trade, but you'll get those minutes back and then some. So here's faster startup. Why, oh why, does Microsoft continue to demand that we provide a password every time Windows boots up? Right, security, but shouldn't users get to decide if they want the password to protect their PCs? You'd think, but based on the hoops you have to jump through to disable the startup password, Microsoft obviously feels pretty strongly about it, and even if you're a fast typist, stopping to enter that password costs you at least a few seconds per boot. There's a detailed post devoted to eliminating this password pit stop, but I can give you the steps right here. 1. Click inside the search field, type NetPLWiz. So it's NetPLWiz, and press enter. 2. Uncheck the box next to users, must enter a username and password to use this computer, then apply and enter the password to approach the change. Done. Faster shutdown. If you're old school like me, you still shut down your computer every night, or every time you throw it into your laptop bag and hit the road. Alas, in Windows 10, the shutdown process still requires 3 clicks and a menu. Come on. In my post, How to Quickly Shut Down Windows 10, I outline 3 faster options. My favorite, the shutdown shortcut, which adds to actual shutdown icon to the desktop. Just right-click any open space in the desktop, then click New, then Shortcut in the location field that appears. Paste in the following. %WinDIR%/System32/Shutdown.exe/S/T0. The next time and finish the shortcut setup. So you might want to go and get this article, obviously, to be able to put that in there. But then you just double-click and shutdown goes. No questions asked. And finally, faster start menu. If your machine is a few years old, you have noticed that Windows 10 spiffy new start menu is slow to appear. That could be because it's animated and animation consumes horsepower. Thankfully, you can turn off automation for speedier access to start. Here's how. Click in the search field, type sysdm.cpl, and press enter. Click the Advanced tab, then Settings button in the Performance section. Step 3, uncheck the box for Animate Windows when minimizing and maximizing, and then click Apply. And that's it. Now the Start menu should stop to a life quicker. Same goes for all your windows, in fact, because now those won't be animated either. Have you found other ways to get Windows 10 a little kick in the butt? Share your tips with him. So there you go. 3 ways to that, you know, you just want to get to the information. You don't want the fancy-dancy user interface. So this article has given you that opportunity. So we move on from there to Facebook. And Facebook is looks to appease advertisers with new options. And so remember back when Facebook first started and people were saying, why would you even buy the stock for Facebook because it doesn't have a business model? Well, now it's clear when you hear what's going on here with Facebook and advertising, they have a mature business model, and on top of that, they're being intelligent by listening to their advertisers and meeting the demands of the advertisers. It's a growing, evolving process, but listen to what's going on. So the Fool.com reports that Facebook Inc. looks for appease advertisers with new options. And Adam Levy on the 3rd wrote that, with the largest social network in the world, Facebook is a huge attraction for advertisers. Nowhere else can a company reach as many people as quickly and easily, but many brands feel that a lot of their ad views went mostly unseen by users. The problem is that Facebook counts an ad view as soon as any part of an ad comes into a user's screen. This month, Facebook added the option for advertisers to only pay for ad views that an ad has become 100% viewable. So if somehow you were scrolling and you just saw the first line of an ad, in the old days, Facebook would count that as a view. Now, a company that's paying for that advertising could say, no, you have to be able to see the entire ad before we'll pay for it. At the same time, Facebook announced that it would offer third-party video ad analytics from Moat. These moves would help Facebook continue increasing its average ad prices going forward. Visibility is everything for brands. Brand advertising are the real companies demanding Facebook offer the option for 100% in-view ads. Direct response campaigns often pay-per-click instead of impression, so if the ad goes unseen by users, it doesn't impact their total cost. Brands, on the other hand, want their images or videos to be seen. Earlier this year, Facebook offered them the option to pay only for video ads after users watched 10 seconds, after complaints that its autoplay feature, video feature, was causing video ads to go unseen despite Facebook's metrics. To that end, Facebook's partnership with Moat should provide more insight into how users are responding to video ads. Facebook has already shifted from a served impressions attribution to a viewed impressions model. The former changes an advertiser as charges an advertiser as soon as an ad is served to the system, whether a user scrolls far enough to see it or not. Last year, Google found that 56% of ads on the web go unseen. ComScore put that number at 54% in 2013. Still, Facebook believes it creates value for advertisers as soon as an ad comes into view, and it has a point. Just seeing a brand name at the top of a post can have a branding effect on people who see it. But advertisers want what they want, and some have held out from advertising on Facebook until it implemented a 100% in-view system. The influx of new big-budget advertisers into Facebook's system should help push ad prices higher. At the beginning of September, Facebook updated its conversion lift tools for advertisers. The new tools allowed advertisers to measure brand and sales lift of an ad campaign, not just against a control audience, but against other ad campaigns. That means advertisers will quickly be able to learn how much of an impact 100% in-view ads are having on its campaigns. This in case, then, when Facebook is hoping it's wrong. If 100% in-view ads provide a significant lift in sales or brand awareness, advertisers will pay more for them. In the way Facebook benefits from the increase of big-budget advertisers and delivering higher value leading to even higher ad prices. In partnering with Moat, Facebook is showing advertisers that it doesn't have to rely on its homegrown analytics tools. Moat will start with just video ads, but will eventually extend to all news feed ads. While Moat won't offer the full capabilities of conversion lift, big-budget advertisers are capable of pulling together similar analytic tools from results and to help them internal measurements. This removes any bias involved in Facebook's analytics, providing more assurance as to whether Facebook ads are working. There's no doubt that these two moves will make advertisers happy, and if Facebook is as good as targeting advertisers as all indications say it is, it should have a positive impact on its average ad prices going forward. So there you have it. Facebook continues to grow in a mature way, listening to its customers, its advertisers, and making a way to improve it. And that's just fine. We're going to take another break, and we'll be back with more of Tech Today in just a few minutes.
Hi, I'm Joe Peters of Weikert Realtors. Buying or selling a property can be one of the most expensive undertakings you face in your lifetime, and selecting the right realtor to help you through this process can dramatically affect your success or your failure. I have personally helped hundreds of buyers and sellers through this process in achieving their dreams and goals in 100 and Somerset County areas over the past 10 years. I believe that this experience should be a smooth, seamless one for you and not a roller coaster ride. But the best judgment as to whether or not I deliver this to my customers is their reactions in their own words.
One of the things we liked about Joe was that he would return calls within minutes if he wasn't able to pick up.
You know, Joe guided us through the process of selling our home and made a complicated transaction appear seamless.
How do I accomplish this? By approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, I try to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them my own. Then, I go out and take the mass amounts of data that we have and distill them down to a few understandable action points to be considered. Finally, I control the entire process through technologies to ensure that we're not going to hit any speed bumps along the way. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let me show you how to take my level of professional expertise and put it to work for you in achieving your real estate goals and dreams. I can be reached at 908-238-0118. Thanks for your time.
Hey, this is Big C of Good Morning Hunterdon on HuntingChamberRadio.com. Like what you hear on Hunterdon Chamber Radio? Now you can take it with you. Download our Hunterdon Chamber Radio app from iTunes and Google Play Store now. Get schedules, station information, listen live, or to the latest podcasts. Everything in the palm of your hand or in your car during your commute. Get the HuntingChamberRadio.com app today.
Hi, I'm Pat Smits, law offices of Patricia Garrity Smits, LLC. The Hunterdon Chamber is a great resource to find the best local business people and meet new friends.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Finishing up Tech Today here, just got a few more things to talk about. Tons of articles out there on technology that I definitely want to get to you, but we only have an hour, and so we get to as much as we can, one of the things that's going on out there is Comcast. Comcast's brilliant plan to make you accept data caps is to refuse to admit their data caps. Brad Reed reports on October 2nd that Yahoo Tech, it's on Yahoo Tech, and it says Comcast has a problem. It wants to implement data caps, but knows customers hate data caps. Its solution? Call them something else other than data caps. As DSL Reports points out, Comcast is bringing its capped data plans to lucky customers in Florida while simultaneously insisting that it isn't implementing data caps. In short, Comcast's plan are the same ones that AT&T and Verizon have implemented for years now with their 4G LTE networks. You're offered an array of tiered plans that give you a set limit on data that you use every month and then charge you overage fees if you exceed it. Comcast is also offering a more expensive unlimited data plan in which you can keep the unlimited data plan you've traditionally had for an extra $30 a month. Traditionally, AT&T and Verizon hadn't made a big deal out of their capped plans being referred to as data caps. In fact, it's widely accepted in the world of tech jargon that both carriers have data caps. Comcast, however, has a different take on the matter. The company says that real data caps only occur when you're completely cut off from your internet service after exceeding your monthly limit, whereas with these plans, you're only charged an average fee. We don't call it a cap, Comcast spokesperson Charlie Douglas tells Fortune. We call it a data plan, just like wireless companies have data plans. But why stop at boring old data plans, Comcast? Why not call them happy plans? Or if you want to go all red, white, and blue, freedom plans or liberty caps. What's particularly galling about Comcast's take on its capped data plans, however, is its insistence that they're really about fairness. After all, the company argues, why should Mr. and Mrs. Normal Internet user have trouble viewing their favorite cat GIFs because some Uber dork is illegally downloading 4K movies from his basement 24 hours a day? The trouble with this, of course, is that the amount of data that internet applications consume is constantly growing. So while using 300 gig a month might seem like a lot to some people right now, It won't be once more people data stream Netflix in 4K. And anyone who downloads games from the web right now can easily go over their monthly cap in no time. For instance, consider that Grand Theft Auto 5 weighs in at just under 49 gig, which means that downloading just one game can blow through 16% of your monthly cap. But simply, these happy freedom caps have nothing to do with fairness. Rather, they're a business decision made by Comcast to help generate more revenue to make up declining pay TV subscribers. At any rate, if you live in Florida and Comcast tries to tell you that it isn't a data cap, don't believe it, unless, that is, you don't have AT&T and Verizon's wireless services have data caps either. Yeah, it continues to go on, and quite honestly, the best thing to do, as we talked about, is to move off to streaming services, get away from cable, and unfortunately, right now, you're going to deal with Comcast, and that's gonna get you more data, but it's going to save you by getting away from cable. See, in order to save your money, you need to make a decision as to whether you're really going to stay with cable. And if you get away from cable and just go to streaming, you might pay that extra $30 a month, but you'll actually get more viewing options by doing it. So you're getting a better viewing availability at your leisure for less price than the combined amount of cable, data, and voice. Now, whoever's using voice from a cable company, I'm telling you right now, you are wasting your money. At $29.95 or $39.95, there are better plans out there. They give you exactly the same thing. You can give me all that bundling nonsense you want, but if I'm telling you that I can get you a voice over IP plan for $29 a year, not a month, a year, I've already saved you $290 a year by doing that. So please look at that. It's very unfortunate how much people are paying for phone that they really don't need to. How about this? This is kind of cool. Pronoun is a self-publishing platform for authors, is ready to serve humanity. Written on TechCrunch, it says that John Briggs says that Pronoun is a self-publishing system that aims to help authors get their books edited and printed, is beginning the long road to making it easier for self-published authors to get noticed. The company, founded by Josh Brody and Ben Zook, raised $3.5 million in June to create books that people will read. The goal is noble, but bringing all the tools authors need into one place, the team hopes to ensure that self-published books will maintain the quality and readability of traditionally published books. Brody is the founder of Bookler, a company that supplied data and analytics for book industry. They currently have 3,000 authors on the platform, as well as 150 service providers. The providers ensure that the content coming out of the site is up to snuff and does not contain typos. So the authors who self-publish, many companies charge to perform one or another of the many steps that are needed to get a book to readers. This complex ecosystem of providers who charge vastly different and often large amounts for confusingly overlapping services makes self-publishing a hard and intimidating prospect for many authors. Pronoun offers the best of both worlds and will also put your book onto all major bookstores. It also offers promotion optimization and metadata updates. Will Pronoun be able to pull off everything it promises? There's no telling, but Brody has an established track record, and the industry is ripe for disruption and or destruction. So far, authors can request their own public URLs and prepare for experience that may or may not finally punch a hot poker in the benign publishing industry. There's lots of folks that I've had on my show that I've done, have been authors, and it's a daunting process. It is a daunting process. It's been explained time after time, and I'm happy to report that hopefully people will be able to publish their own books and bypass the major publishing houses. That would be great. Well, it's about that time. We're going to have to move on out of here. Something's About Money with Joe, Jeannie, Tony, and Michelle will be on in just a few minutes. Do not fear technology. Use it, understand it, and embrace it. That is the mission of Tech Today. Hopefully we've imparted that mission onto you. We'll talk to you next week. Have a great week, folks. And watch out for those operating systems. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.